Okay, I think like you said, we stopped in around verse 10. And I like always to review for a minute the train of thoughts. Let me just, because the idea that since we can't read everything at a go, it's good we understand the train of thoughts. In fact, that makes it so easy to understand some things that Paul is saying as you are reading on, because a lot of times, you make statements which, if you don't understand the context, it won't make a lot of meaning. That's because of the way Paul writes, like we found out. Now, so we started from Romans chapter 1. We have come to understand that Paul was trying to explain to Jews and Gentiles the importance of the gospel, that is the power of God unto salvation. So he has described why everybody needs salvation, because the people who were outside the law, they did not give God thanks. They did not acknowledge him. Therefore, they walked in sin. God gave them over to the sinfulness of their heart. But then those who had the law did not obey the law. Even though they obeyed the law, every time they broke the law, the blood of bulls and goats, we said, cannot take away sin. That is, the one that has been broken stands broken, even though you obey the other one. So even Jews also, they need salvation. So the reason why he was not, the point he was trying to make is the importance of faith as a means of salvation. First, of reconciliation to God, and then the means of salvation. We have explained that there's a difference between those two expressions, reconciliation and salvation. That reconciliation is what a man experiences when he supposedly gives his life to Christ and repents of his sins. You get my point? Salvation, like I said, there's a place I was reading earlier on in the book of, in Amplified Bible. The Amplified Bible says something about we shall be saved like progressively, day by day. All right? I don't have it here now because it's my other computer that I have that software. That I have that software installed that contains the Amplified Bible. I don't have it here. But anyway, if I get there, I might be able to quickly refer to it. So we've explained all of those things. So that's where we are. Paul was, in chapter 4, he described the importance of that faith using the life of Abraham. And again, what he was trying to do all the while, if you read it very well, was to explain to both Jews and Gentiles that they needed exactly the same thing. In fact, if you read all the epistles of Paul, you will see the centrality of his gospel is to explain to people that there's no longer any difference between Jew or Gentile, that the same God is rich unto all that call upon him. Do you understand my point? And that's what he kept on trying to explain. And I said before that that's one major reason why he had problems with the Jews all the time, because they were quite superior in their mentality relating with the Gentiles, all right? Now, so that's where we are just trying to review the train of thoughts. Now, Romans chapter 5, we read from verse 1. It said, therefore, having been justified by faith, we have peace with God. And then it now said, there's a grace in which we stand, and our introduction into that grace is by faith, and we rejoice knowing that will produce for us a glory. We have an expectation of that. That's verse 2. Now, we read up to verse 10, which is repeating what he said in verse 1. For if while we were sinners, we were reconciled to God through the death of his son, much more having been reconciled, this is where the Amplified used that expression, we shall be saved. That is, it's a progressive day-by-day thing by his life. That is, God's spirit, God's grace is working, number one, to continually transform us and to deliver us from the wrath that is to come. That's the meaning of we shall be saved by his life. I've explained that salvation does not mean that I have given my life to Christ. Now I am a Christian, I go to church. I said that is reconciliation. That actually is justification. But salvation means that I am experiencing in practical terms what reconciliation and justification has done for me. Are you getting my point? All right, that's why Paul will explain that people should work out their salvation. Because, you see, it doesn't about Paul. You have to keep referring to other letters he wrote to be able to understand. Now, the one I've referred to mostly these days is Philippians chapter 2 and chapter 3. You'll see that Paul was explaining there that, now I'm using my own words now, that it's as you grow up, they say there are different spheres of life, and we have different attitudes in different aspects of life. Listen to this clearly. It is as you renew your heart to the attitude of Christ Jesus, listen, that you experience the salvation in every aspect of life. Did you get what I said? I hope it's clear. When he said we shall be saved by his life, that's what it means. First, you are reconciled, therefore, your former works, because you see that as you go on, the effect of sin has been removed from your life. But When we talk about the salvation of souls, when we talk about the transformation of the mind, renewing of the mind, it is as you renew the mind in a particular area that you experience the salvation in that area. I don't know whether you get my point. That's what grace does. Grace does not work for you. You know, that's why I keep on emphasizing the meaning of unmerited favor. Unmerited favor. That let's not misunderstand unmerited favor. It doesn't mean though I'm a sinner. Eh? Yet God just gave me all the good things of life. That's not the meaning of grace. Grace means that there is a power that works towards those who believe. Now, that power works as they believe. Do you get my point? They were sinners. But for the sinner to experience grace, he has to exercise faith. He said in Romans chapter 4 that he has to be by grace, a faith that it might be in accordance with grace. What I'm saying is that God does not just, okay, all right, you guys are now, you have given your life to Christ, therefore grace is working in every area. No, you have to believe in that area for grace to work in that area. So if we are saying unmerited favor, what we mean is that the power that we experience, the blessing that comes into our lives, we did not do enough to deserve it. But if we want to look at it in another area, I remember a friend of mine shared this one to me long ago. He shared it with me long ago. And he understood things I did not understand. He was used to studying the scriptures and having understanding. At that time, I was used to reading books and learning simply from books. Do you understand? So one day he called me and said, Banky, this grace thing, he said, grace can be merited. What? What does this guy drink? How could he say that? You know, that's the kind of thing, of course, that was in my mind. But, you know, much later, and I went and called him and said, that thing you said about grace, that was much, much later, maybe a year or a month later. I said, can you come and explain? Even he had become thoroughly confused. He couldn't remember what he said, why he said it, and how he said it. That is, he just said, that's been a while, that he doesn't know again. I just have that in the back of my mind. When I now began to study, all right, and now I keep on remembering that he said, maybe that was what the Holy Spirit opened his eyes to see, which he couldn't remember anymore. But the fact is that I now understood what he meant by grace can be merited. Now, maybe that's not what he meant, but I can easily relate with that, in that, yes, the experience we have, our abilities can't reach it. But if we renew our mind enough, which is an effort on our part, when the mind has been renewed, of a necessity, God will pour grace. Do you understand my point? And that's what he meant by, well, possibly that was what he meant when he said grace can be merited. Good enough, when I started studying, whether grace is merited or not was not my problem. My problem is that grace means the power of God, which is released towards those who believe. Are you getting my point? So if you call believing meriting it, fine. If you say it still means it's unmerited, it makes no difference. But the way I understood it is that grace is that the power of God is manifested in the life of anyone who believes. Now, so what I'm explaining here is this. That verse 10, when he said that we shall be saved. Remember what we said, that salvation does not mean I have given my life to Christ. That's only, so giving your life to Christ is what? Reconciliation. I think we have established that. That is, we have been reconciled. We have been justified by faith. But I said that when, having been justified, Paul now puts it as a almost futuristic, all right? But more like a present and continuous and futuristic, and I use that expression, term. That this salvation is not only gradual, it is continual. Do you understand my point? And I'm explaining here now, it's as you, in each aspect of life, get the attitude of God. Using Paul from Philippians chapter 3, that is when you experience the salvation in that area. I just feel like explaining that issue of being saved by his life and that issue of grace again. Because this is what grace means. Now, so this is the power of grace for Christians. Let me say that again. In fact, for those of us who are here, I wanted to teach this on Saturday, but I didn't get there. And I'll probably go into it next Saturday. Let me explain to you again how grace works in the life of the believer. He said, having been reconciled, we shall be saved. I'm explaining that this is how we get saved. This is a glory that we will experience. Grace is when the power of God gets results for you. Are you getting my point? Grace is when everybody struggles for 10 hours to achieve a particular result. You walk, not struggle now, you walk for an hour and you get more results. That's the meaning of grace. Are you getting my point? That is, people want to build a building 10 stories high and they walk and labor and gather money for 2 years. And then the first day you think about it, as soon as you lay the foundation stone, before you turn around, 2 months after, what people did in 2 years, you have completed. And you did not stay up as late, as you didn't stay up at night as much as those who did over 2 years. That is what grace means. That is, there's power working for you that is beyond you. Are you getting my point? A practical example of grace again, just to help us understand. A man who walks alone, all right, on natural plane now, is walking and getting the same amount of results. But one who walks, who has 10 people at his command doing the same thing, all right, he doesn't have to touch that wall. He stands and gives instructions. 10 people walking according to his instructions, we get more than 10, you know, more than one person walking 10 times, you know, result. You understand the principle there? They get more than 10 times what those guys are getting. Now, that man standing is more relaxed. He's just giving instructions. You do this, you don't do that. Then you find, therefore, at the end of the day, oh, this is what he has achieved. But if you look closely, he was not the one that achieved it, but 10 people working with him. It's his spirit now. They are literally, is the angels of God, is the power of God working with him, which you don't see. But in reality, they are there materially, physically. I don't use physically. Tangibly, that's better. Working. And they get results for the fellow. So we say the man is working by grace. Please, I want us to understand this. So how will a Christian experience it? That's what I'm explaining. You experience it simply. This is how it works. By, on that particular subject, first getting the mind of God. That's what I was saying last Saturday about conversion. That is, to be converted to God's attitude is what releases grace into people's lives. Now, everything in life, you know, I've been saying this again and again. Paul makes it clear that there are different aspects of life. That is why you will see a man very strong in one aspect, for example, ministry. But he has such a strong and negative attitude towards marriage. So that area, no. I don't want to say some things because it's being recorded, all right? There are people that I will listen to in every other area, but there's certain areas they get there, I don't listen. Not out of stubbornness or feeling like I know everything, but I just know that this person doesn't know what he's saying. That is, his attitude there has not been corrected. Therefore, grace is not yet flowing from his speech in that area. Therefore, he will not experience the power of God. That's what I'm saying. Listen, in every aspect of life, that is how you find salvation. We're talking about being saved by his life. That is how you find salvation. It is first and foremost sitting down to have the mind renewed. When we get to Romans chapter 12, you see it. That is the renewing of the mind that is the key to the release of what? Grace into people's lives. It's not struggles. It is not at all struggles. There is a reason why God said men should do business. There's a reason why God said Adam should get married. There's a reason why God wanted him to have children. Are you getting my point? It is not working hard to experience the blessing. It is working hard to be transformed in the attitude. Are you following the point I'm making? Remember my story about Hannah. Hannah labored and prayed and prayed, which is what Christians like to do these days. They can pray. Look, tell a man, just come and pray one whole night. He's ready. Sorry, forget. It's not just one night. 1 week before that one night, no food. No, he's ready. Please, let me drop these keys with you because they are very important. 1 week before that one night, he's ready. Before he started the prayer that night, tell him, jog around the field twice. He will do it. He will gladly do it. Then he starts praying. The man starts praying because he's been taught that praying is the key to his salvation. And I'm telling you, no. It is not by prayer that it might be in accordance with grace. It is by what? Faith. Grace is released. It is not by praying hard. It is by renewing the mind hard. That's why my example I like to use in that area is, if people want to get married, they can save money for a year towards that wedding. You know that? They buy the most beautiful gown. This gown, it has not existed before the foundation of the world. Until the end of the world, nothing like this shall be found. So people exert all the energy. All right? But then ask them simply, oh boy, there is this 10 tape series preached by one man that knows God in that area. All of you settle down and listen to it. Man, I'm very busy. Now, time. I not get time. Time. I not get time. No, time. Now, this time is a problem. Which means something. He doesn't yet understand the key to the success of what is about to enter. He's spending one whole year to plan for a two-day event. All right? Of which the second is a repetition of the first day in another dimension. That is, first day is traditional. The second day is still marriage. Both of them are valid. Do you understand what I'm trying to say? But then, he doesn't understand that the release of power. Now, if tomorrow dancer starts having problems, you know what, where he goes to again? Prayer. So, 1 week fasting. Then one night, jogging. Before one whole night of prayer. And then, he thinks that it will work. Grace is never released like that. Why I've said all of these things is to explain the meaning of what? Being saved. Are you getting my point? Now, verse 11, he said, not only this, I'll read, he said, I want to, once I get down to around 14, I'll start reading rather fast, okay? Now, not only this, but we also exalt in God through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom we have now received the reconciliation. I explain what that means. He said, therefore, just as through one man, that is, as a consequence of this reconciliation, just as through one man sin entered into the world and death through sin, and so death spread to all men because all sin. For, you know, this is Paul writing for you. He wants to make a statement. He keeps clarifying the earlier part before he makes the latter part. He said, sin entered the world through and death through sin, and death spread to all men. And I was now explaining the reason why death spread to all men. He said, for until the law, sin was in the world, but sin is not imputed when there is no law. Nevertheless, death reigned from Adam until Moses, and even over those who had not sinned in the likeness of the offense of Adam, who is a type of him who was to come. But the free gift is not like the transgression. This is still in parentheses, all right? In brackets. For if by the transgression of the one many died, much more did the grace of God and the gift by the grace of the one Jesus Christ abound to many. The gift is not like that which came through the one who sinned. For on the one hand, the judgment arose from one transgression, is only in condemnation. Now, if you don't have this explained, it can be mind-twisting, the way Paul writes, and believe me, can be mind-twisting. But on the other hand, the free gift arose from many transgressions, resulting in justification. Now, he's back to where he started. That one was in parenthesis. For if by the transgression, has he even reached that? No, he hasn't. For if by the transgression of the one, death reigned through the one, yes, that's where we are back to where we started. Much more those who receive the abundance of grace and the gift and of the gift of righteousness will reign in life through the one Jesus Christ. Now, so then, as through one transgression there resulted condemnation to all men, even so through one act of righteousness there resulted justification of life to all men. Please let me now go back and tie that together, because he was putting everything, like I said, in parentheses. Now, this is what he was saying. He said that this is the reason why we exalt, because we have received justification. Now, I was not explaining the principle, which I, having read it, I will just explain it. It's difficult to follow him the way it was, you know, jumping from here to the other. I'll just give you a summary. It said, until the law, sin was in the world. Now, what he was saying is this. Again, that is, you can remember our context, that is differentiating again between Jew and Gentile, and then uniting them again, both under sin. Because if you read in context, it will appear as if he was saying that the law, okay, was the definition for sin. So he was explaining to them that, now, we have been reconciled, we said, we'll be saved. Now, this is how we know we'll be saved. That this is how sin began. Sin began because of this sin of one man, all right, through Adam, all right? He now said that, he was now explaining that that's death. Now, as a result of sin, death came. Please follow what I'm trying to say. As a result of sin, death came. Let me define what death is again. Death does not mean people just began to die. Death is a summary of every negative thing you see on this world. Let me explain what I mean. If a man starts a business believing it will do well and it collapses after 1 year, that is death. If a man gets married believing that we shall live together happily ever after, and 2 years later, because of punches flying and hot oil distributed with a fan in the house, there's now a permanent separation And divorce, that is what? Death. Are you getting my point? I mean, if you start something and it never ends successfully, the spirit of death is inside that thing. Do you get my point? Death is that God looked at Adam and said that the earth will not yield its increase. He said, thorns and thistles it will bring forth for you. In the sweat of your brow, you will eat bread. That is, the earth has become cursed with the power of death. When he looked at Eve, he said, your desire will be for your husband, and he shall rule over thee. Please, if you remember, then I explained the meaning of your desire will be for your husband. You desire what you don't have. That's the summary. Please go and get it when we discuss that one. I think that was it earlier this year or last year. Okay, was earlier this year. This year, yes. I want to start Genesis chapter 1, the earlier part of Genesis. That is, what he was saying is that because of this thing that you have done, because you have gone ahead and you had begun to make decisions in your home without being subject to the husband I have placed over you. Do you follow what I'm saying? If I did just by the way, well, don't let me digress too much. I don't want to start giving that one by the way. Let me just stay where I am. Because if I start now, I'll be even like Paul. From there, I jump into another thing. No, so I was saying to the woman that because you have now decided that you will make decisions, crucial decisions on important matters, on issues in the house, and then lead the family without being, you know, subject to the authority in the home, what you will experience is that your husband will become distant from you. I don't know whether you're getting my point. And this is a matter of fact. Suddenly he will become distant. I have heard this before, you know. I said I didn't want to digress, so, but now we just have to do the digression. It's not my fault. Is that okay? See, if a woman is very bossy and exercises authority, maybe you're a firstborn as a woman, all right? Are you getting my point? And you have a lot of younger ones. Because for certain reasons, you've had authority committed into you. Maybe you're a very serious sister. You now went to campus. They now anointed you mommy of fellowship. You know that kind of thing. One of the most dangerous titles to give young girls in this world is that title, mommy of fellowship. If they give it to you, reject it. Lead the fellowship, don't refuse as a young girl to be called mommy. I'll tell you the reason. Now, but let's assume now that you've had this situation in which authority has been conferred upon you and you are used to issuing instructions and directing people. One of the major work you have to do upon your soul, you must do that work, is that once a man is of marriage, that is, it looks like the type of person who can be your husband. Do you understand what I'm saying? Start calling him sir. Not for any other reason than you are training yourself in what? Submission. Really. I know what I'm saying. I know what I'm saying. Because this is what happens. A lot of people have not been taught in this. I have found out that when a woman takes pride in the fact that she can put her husband in order, she will lose him sharp. Now, take that from Banky. If you have not married him, don't try it. He won't marry you. I know what I'm saying. What God is saying in effect is that your desire will be for him. You know what it means? You have lost him, so you will be longing for that which you do not have. I know what I'm saying. Better learn it. Do you get my point? If God shows you vision, don't use it to direct your husband. Except the two of you settle down and say, let us pray. Is there anything God is ministering to you? And you say, oh, it appears that it's not like, yes. praise God. My husband, you know you are not spiritual. I am the spiritual person. Do you get what I'm trying to say? But let's leave that aside. You know, I told you I didn't want to digress. It's Chike that caused all of this. He's having to make some crucial decisions in the area of marriage. So he's the one that's causing all these problems. Since he sat in front, I have not been able to focus on Romans chapter 5. Maybe he should go to the back. What do you think? Okay, let's leave him there. Oh, the Lord is good. Now, so anyway, you know why I went into all of that gist there? Now, just to explain, say, when God told Eve that, he said, your desire will be for your husband, that is, you will lose him. That's essentially what he was saying. Are you getting my point? And I said, if you have that kind of attitude, you must consciously subject your will and throw away those titles they gave you as a single girl. Are you getting my point? As soon as you marry, carry the titles, all right? Say, I count all this but loss. Do you understand? That I may know Christ, all right? For the excellency of the knowledge of Christ, I count them but dung. It's important to, I know what I'm saying. So when we're describing death, therefore, all those things are the manifestations of death. But what I've tried to say in all of this is that you must understand that death is the natural result of sin. That's what Paul was explaining. That death is what? The natural result of sin. I've just used that to define death. But what is the meaning of sin again? Just to say it again, we've said it several times. Sin is not a moral issue, okay? Can you be, because what is right morally in some people's judgment or in some societies is sin before God. Are you getting my point? It is sin before God. So it's not a matter of what's, how we feel about it morally. Sin simply defined is walking short of God's standards. And I might say this to you, it will interest you. A lot of areas, we are walking in sin. Now, please, I don't mean to bring sin consciousness that, you know, I'm a sinner. God is angry with me. That's not what I'm trying to say. I am saying that in everything that you have not yet met up, you have not yet risen up to the level of God's standards. Are you getting me? Then that is where you are walking in sin. And that's why John said, if we say we have no sin, we are deceiving ourselves and the truth is not in us. But the Holy Spirit will occasionally bring a new area, because what God is doing is developing you every day. He will bring a new area before you and show you where your opinion, where your mindset, where your standards are lower than that of God. Are you getting my point? And then you need to confess that and allow God to help you have your mind renewed. So I've just used that to define again what sin is and what death is. So Paul was now saying that death reigned. You know, I said that he was trying to equate both Jew and Gentile. That sin is not just the transgression of the law, but that even before sin, before the law came, sin was in the world. What he was saying in effect is that even though the Gentiles did not have the law, they too were under sin. Are you getting my point? We'll discuss that one before. Don't let me go over it again. He now said that even upon those who did not sin, so he said death reigned. Now, this is what I want to understand. That death reigned from Adam until Moses. Now, there's a reason why I use the word until Moses. Because if I use the word death reigned from one point to the other, it tells you, therefore, that when it got to Moses, the rain stopped. Does that not make sense? But there is the interesting part. The rain stopped only as far as the Jews were concerned, because they were the ones that were under the laws of Moses. So it said it rained until Moses. He said even over those who had not sinned, in the likeness of the offense of Adam. Now, the offense of Adam is that God gave him a direct commandment and he transgressed a direct commandment. What the kind of sin they did was that, the kind of sin of Adam is was that he had a covenant actually with God. If you read them from Amos, that the sin like Adam, they broke my covenant. He had a kind of covenant with God and he consciously broke the covenant. You know, yesterday, I gave my son the hottest beating of his life. He had never been disciplined by anybody, including me, like that until yesterday. I sent him to bed without food. He had never experienced that before. At the end, I told him, do you know why I disciplined you like this? He said, yes. I said, what did you do? He said, I broke Olubenga's bicycle. I said, no, that's not the sin. He said, I rode Olubenga's bicycle. I said, no, that is not the sin. Because actually, he went on his brother's bicycle. If you know his own weight and his brother's weight, the bicycle saw him coming and collapsed. And he came to me and said, Daddy, look at your bicycle, it's broken. I asked him simply, did you ride it? He said, yes. Then the thrashing began. And he said, why did that thrash him? My wife and I were discussing later. I said, it is not the breaking of the bicycle. I said, it was because the day we bought the bicycle, a big one was bought for him, and a small one was bought for his younger brother with a bucket behind to carry the small girl. His own was a big boy's bicycle. And I specifically instructed him. I said, come, don't ever, ever ride your brother's bicycle. That was actually a tricycle. I said, because you are too heavy for it, it will break. Now you have your own, he has his own. He said, fine. And then he never forgot the commandment. In fact, yesterday when Chidera came to the house, Chidera is a little boy there, he told him, I heard later, that daddy said a big boy must not ride Binga's bicycle. To tell you, he didn't forget. But that foolishness that is bound up in the heart of a child came upon him at night and he decided to give it a try. So I reminded him that, I pointed out to him that you did not forget that instruction. He said no. I said, I told you not to ride the living guy's bicycle. Yes. I bought you your own bicycle. Yes. So you deliberately disobeyed my instruction, though you didn't forget it. I said, that is why you are getting this trash. That is why you are going to sleep without food. That is why your bicycle is under lock and key for 2 weeks. And that is why there will be no Cartoon Network showing for the next 7 days. Not because you broke a bicycle, but because you remembered the commandment of thy Lord and you disobeyed. Do you follow the point I'm making? That was the sin of Adam. The sin of Adam was not, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not eat, thou shalt... No. The sin of Adam was simple. Every tree, oh boy, no problem. But this one, and the Bible said that Eve was deceived. But Adam was not deceived. You get what I mean by the sin of Adam? So that was why the sin of Adam could not be forgiven. It pained me yesterday that my son was going to sleep without food. The mother interceded for him. But I said, you see, I must discipline him so that he will know that daddy is to be obeyed, and obeyed absolutely. Do you get what I'm going to say? Later on, after plenty talk, I told my wife, okay, you can give me a small biscuit. Tell him that you still can't eat, but this little biscuit is just to show you that there's mercy, you know, towards you, but judgment is still there. You have to learn. The name of God is being blasphemed amongst the Gentiles because of you. Therefore, now, I hope you are getting the point I'm making here. That was what happened to Adam. That was why the sin of Adam could not have been, you know, it couldn't be atoned for by the shedding of blood of bulls and goats. Somebody had to die, literally die, because Adam's sin was deserving of death. Now, I want to understand that, because the sin of Adam was very, very potent. What he did actually, now there's something I want you to understand as I'm explaining this. What he did was to open the door for, okay, I'll explain that in a moment. Let me just leave it. So I just want to let you know that death, he said, even over those who are not sinned in the likeness of the offense of Adam. So I've just described to you now what is the offense of Adam. Do you understand my point? But the other kinds of sin, which whatever it is, because Jesus described something. He said, the servant who knows what to do and does not do it will receive what? Many stripes. But the one who doesn't know what to do and for that reason did not do it will do what? Receive few stripes. Do you get my point? Both of them receive what? Stripes. But if you did it Adam's way, plenty stripes. But if you did it the one in which you did not know, we will still give you stripes, but the stripes will be few. Now, what I mean is this. Sin is not that it's not that God gave you a commandment and you disobeyed. Sin is that there is a standard and you are falling short of it. Let us, the other day, a computer was brought in from the US, a desktop, not a laptop now. And then, you know, God last minute just helped me. Because I'm so used to receiving laptops that come from abroad and I just plug it in. Because the power is 100 to 240, no trouble. But for a desktop, it's not like that. On a desktop power pack, you select whether your voltage is Nigerian and, you know, the rest of the world, or it is American. 110, if it's American. 230, if it's Nigerian, you know, as an example. But being sold supposedly to an American, do you understand? It was set on 110. And I almost forgot. It just remains small. Me, I plug them. If I had plugged it, it would have just waited for about a minute, then you smell something. Or you may hear, boom, one capacitor is gone. And you see smoke rise up from the back. Now, am I being punished? No. Nobody's angry with me. The manufacturer is not angry with me. But I have not obeyed an instruction, though I forgot about the instruction. The issue is that the computer is not, at that setting, needed an American voltage, 110 volts. But I plugged into a Nigerian socket, 220 to 240, it will blow. Nobody's angry, but it will blow. And I say, oh, sorry, I did not know, but it is blown. Okay, I didn't do it deliberately, but it is blown. Do you get my point? That is what sin is. Sin is not an argument with God on who is right or who is wrong or who gave instruction or did not give instruction. It's more like, I made this world, you did not. If you do it against my order, even though you did not deliberately disobey, it is still wrong. Do you follow my point? Let me say this to you. It will interest you. I wondered, with all the love that God loved David, why couldn't he live beyond a paltry age of 70? When Jacob walks into the presence of Pharaoh, Pharaoh's jaw dropped open and says, "Sir, how old are you?" His age was alarming to Pharaoh. He had never seen a man that old. And Jacob told him, "Oh, the days of my sojourning are just about 120. But I'm not yet as old as my fathers. Go and check it. Isaac lived to be like 160. Now, are you getting my point? I said, shortly after, David, at the age of 70, he served the purpose of God in a generation, and then he slept. I asked myself the question, why? I will tell you one of the answers. David's life with women was what killed him early. Take that from me. That Pastor Banky said that his attitude towards women was what did not allow him to live long. He said at the age of 70, he was so sick, they had to put a small girl. You know that they just knew what this man lived on. They had to put a small girl beside his bed, with him in bed, to be keeping him warm. And they had to tell us that normally David not let such things pass him by. But in this particular case, at least we can testify that he did not touch the woman. You know what that means? That normally, David, forget that one. Before the night is over, the girl is another color. David. So when I read it, I said, bro, that was his problem.